This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning and welcome to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanasin with Noel Lim and Shazana Mokhtar in the studio this morning. It is now August 11th, a Wednesday, 7:06 a.m. And in about 15 minutes, we'll go through the local papers and headlines as well as some international news. But before that, let's take a look at what happened internationally in markets.
Well, looking at the US markets, the Dow was up 0.5%. S&P 500 was up marginally, up 0.1%. NASDAQ, however, was down 0.5%. And Asian markets was looking mostly green. Nikkei was up 0.2%. Shanghai Composite up 1%. Hang Seng up 1.2%. The Kospi was down 0.5%. Singapore's SDI up 0.9%. And also FBM KLCI was up marginally, I think.
It was up about half a percentage point, about 0.5%. And this was, of course, on Monday, because yesterday was a public holiday. Year to date, the KLCI is down 8%. Not a number that I quite, not a number that I like looking at for sure. Now, for more on international markets, we have Song Seng-Woon, economist at CIMB Private Banking, with us on the line. Good morning, Seng-Woon. Thank you so much for joining us. Now, traditionally, a bullish run on U.S. equities usually leads to equally buoyant Asian markets. That hasn't been happening of late. Why is there a divergence now?
We occasionally still do. I think today it looks like we'll set the follow European and the U.S. peer higher, just because I suppose we got positive news from stimulus, whether it's from the U.S. infrastructure bill in class. But every now and then, you know, the COVID just return, and there's that worry that it could impact economic activities more significantly than what's currently happening. So I think it's really a case of the occasional, let's follow the U.S., European close, and every other day we see what the situation on the ground is, the COVID front, whether there's a further restriction and all restriction being eased or tightened. So, yeah, it's essentially still very much a case of what's happening on the ground, on the data front, on activity front, and what's happening globally in terms of news flow, whether it is from COVID front or currently since we are in the earnings reporting front, the earnings result as well.
Given there's been so much interest in inflation, what are your expectations of US CPI numbers that will be out today?
Oh, it'd be interesting. And then certainly what we are looking at is U.S. CPI prices to increase. Perhaps I think the consensus estimate is looking at a slower pace, looking at a Reuters poll, 0.5%. But me personally, when I look at it, U.S. CPI consists of, it is a basket of goods and services stuff. People in the U.S. pay for. But I might ask here in Asia, where food is a bigger chunk, depending on whether you're developed or more developing, it can be up to 40% as far as the food basket is concerned. In the U.S., the housing component is much larger, up to 40% of the basket of goods and services. And we can see the housing rental business creeping up, may not be fully reflected just yet. But outside of that, we know that the higher prices from freight costs, higher commodity costs are gradually creeping through. But, you know, it can deviate every now and then, month on month. So there will be some volatility still. But I'm still, I think, more worried than U.S. policymakers that U.S. inflation could be seeing more upside surprise in the months to come, rather than being seen as a temporary, because supply disruption, all these things are still persisting even now.
Okay, so you're a little bit more measured in your inflation risk gauge. Can I also ask your opinion on precious metals? Following the flash crash in gold prices, we've seen price levels of other metals like silver and nickel also falling. What are the factors driving the commodity prices plunge?
Well, many factors, because commodities, including precious metals, almost actually all of them, are priced in U.S. dollars. So that's something to be mindful of, in that a stronger dollar can pull down commodities, precious metal, which are priced in dollars. And then on the flip side, you are seeing where interest rate is going, because precious metals don't bear any interest. So if interest rate goes up, as we've seen in U.S. in yield inching up, we could see, you know, investors taking another sort of look at precious metals and saying, this doesn't yield me any interest. Where are we seeing the U.S. dollar? So all these factors play out.
So, well, let's take a look at Singapore. Their final Q2 GDP number, growth numbers should be coming out today. Have recent COVID restrictions impacted the growth trajectory there in any significant way?
Well, Singapore is a far more export-driven country's city-state than many others, including, say, Malaysia. So external demand, trade in goods and services, three times its GDP. So the domestic consumption side is far, far more smaller. So with a restriction in place, it impacted more, say, consumer-facing activities. And I look out my window, I'm still home today, and F&B joints are the ones facing the full brunt. Because you and I, when we do go and dine in at a restaurant, you do tend to spend more. When you take away, you don't take away. The ticket per item is just far smaller. So it's far more this kind of consumer-facing activities that have been hit from the restriction side. Fortunately, like many other Asian countries, Malaysia including, the export-oriented manufacturing side is still doing very well just because the demand side continues to be strong, led by the recovery in demand and economies reopening. Europe, US, and other parts of Asia continue to drive, I think, very solid exports. So the external wing continues to do the heavy lifting, whereas some of the domestic focus consumer-facing activities, whether in supplying goods or services, has felt more of the pinch. But it's only at the margin at this point. But nonetheless, if we see for the second quarter number, we will see sequential pullback in economic activities compared to Q1. And we're suddenly seeing that across Asian countries as they started to report or already reported Q2 GDP. Year-on-year, big bounce, just because of the slump in Q2 last year. But sequentially, Q2 versus Q1, with restrictions in place, economic activity had been certainly impacted.
Well, speaking about Malaysia, Bank Negara will also release GDP numbers, Q2 and 2021 forecasts. What are you anticipating the numbers will look like?
I think I'm going with what I think the consensus had been put up. I think, if I recall, sequentially, there will be, as we were talking about earlier, that pullback from the almost, 2.7, almost 3% Q&P growth in Q1. We may see 1.5-2% pullback in Q2. Suddenly, the uncertainty comes from the fact that the restriction lockdown came in and kicked in more in the later part of Q2, June onwards. So the degree of pullback will be still, I think, through some uncertain year-on-year, low base from last year. So it will still be something quite significant in terms of the year-on-year growth of 12.5% to 13% year-on-year growth. I would say around between 12% to 13% year-on-year growth, very reasonable given the slump that Malaysia and many other countries around the world experienced in Q2 last year. But sequentially, pull back because of restrictions being tightened significantly in the later part of Q2.
And still on the Malaysian markets, Sing-Woon, the ringgit has maintained a tight trading range of 4.2 against the US dollar in recent weeks. And this is in spite of movement restrictions and political uncertainty. Is this level fair value for our currency? And do you think the worst is over for the ringgit?
I think there's still many factors involved. Certainly looking at portfolio flow, which I think the last figures was published in July, we certainly see Malaysia recording a larger foreign portfolio outflow in July, different combination of factors. And going forward, I think it will also depends on several factors. I think where the US dollar goes to is very important, and that one will be perhaps seeing what comes through. And talking the US dollar, it, I think, inched up higher again last night, and even as we speak in Asian trade, will probably tick higher. We'll focus on what central bankers have to say. I think the importance of a gathering the so-called Jackson Hole and Economic Symposium towards the, next week, I think. Yeah, time flies. Yeah, end of August. That's very important. And I think on the political front, what's happening after or when the Malaysian Parliament reconvenes, all these factors, I think, will be very important in terms of shaping confidence and shaping where the ringgit goes to. And I suppose we'll take another look as well after the release of the Q2 GDP, but that's backward-looking. More importantly, is what's going on the economic front in the second half, and much obviously will depend on how the world still fares in the second half. We are seeing infection rate going up in developed economies, but more worrying is also the hospitalization and the fatality rate. If economic activities can still move on with reopening mode, then I think underlying demand will still be supported, and that will be still good for exporting nation countries in Asia like Malaysia, Singapore. So still a whole host of factors behind that as far as where the ringgit is concerned. But the key thing still is where the dollar itself is going to.
Well, very quickly, Song, what are you advising clients to do? Sell ringgit and hold USD given the political uncertainty in Malaysia?
I think it's still really a case of what do you do. If you're in Malaysian base, what you're just going to be living and using ringgit in Malaysia. In terms of portfolio management, if you are suddenly looking at how you manage your wealth, there will always be diversification of portfolio. So it really depends on where you stand at this point. If you are from outside of Malaysia looking at it, we certainly can say, okay, is this the worst or the lowest point that we are seeing for countries, emerging economies in Asia, which is currently facing pandemic? I mean, same situation and same question can be asked about, say, Thailand, for instance. So it's a question of where one stands with which profile and where we put Asian emerging economies at this juncture. Is this a low point in which it cannot go any lower? Then we may talk about, you know, building up sort of exposure to emerging economies where the pandemic may be close to peaking and therefore prices may recover subsequently. So hard to advise at this point is very much a case of where we stand on the risk profile side.
Seng Woon, thank you so much for your time this morning. That was Song Seng Woon, economist with CIMB Private Banking, giving us a lay of the land, especially the last part there in terms of the ringgit outlook, right? A lot of it's going to depend on the dollar and where that goes. But what is it now? 4.2, I've lost it. There we go, 4.2285. Again, another number I don't like, the other one being 8% year-to-date in the red for the FBM KLCI. Very quickly, let's jump over to the US Senate. They passed a $1 trillion bipartisan infrastructure plan overnight, representing what looks to be a huge step for Democrats as they try to push President Joe Biden's sweeping economic agenda through Congress.
That's right. And the legislation, which includes $550 billion in new funding for transportation, broadband, and utilities, got through on a 69-30 vote. There were 19 Republicans that joined all the 50 Democrats in voting for this bill, which I thought was pretty noticeable, noteworthy. Yeah, I mean, it shows that there is bipartisan support for this. Some of the key elements of the bill, there's like $110 billion into roads and bridges. You've got $66 billion into passenger and freight rail, $65 billion into broadband, and $39 billion into public transit, among other things that are being spent. And we could see that U.S. stocks really seem to like this. I mean, both the Dow and the S&P 500 closed higher overnight.
Yeah, I mean, infrastructure stocks, right? So how will this bill be funded? Funding for the bipartisan bill will come from repurposed coronavirus relief money, unused federal unemployed insurance aid, as well as some auctions, spectrum auctions, among other sources. I think the Republicans are resisting Biden's proposal to hike corporate tax for now.
Again, 69-30, that's a strong vote there. I'd be curious to see how the 19 Republicans do in their midterms, whenever that comes about. But very quickly, though, we do have to mention the fact that there are some well, seemingly strings attached right here, because the Democrats do want to pass another $3.5 trillion stimulus package bill to go through. So the chamber is in a 50-49 party line vote, then will proceed to a budget resolution that would allow Democrats to approve what they see as a complementary $3.5 billion spending plan without Republican votes. Again, I think the strategy here was to split these two up so that at least the infrastructure plan could go through. And it could take Congress, it could take months for Congress to pass both measures. Biden pushed for their approval on Tuesday, framing the infrastructure bill as investment that will put people to work. But to win over both centrists wary of the $3.5 billion price tag there, and progressives who want more spending on childcare, paid leave, and climate policy, that is going to be, I think, the tricky line they're going to have to get through, I guess. So keep it here to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.